Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
If you want pure, unfiltered, unadulterated sports, you've come to the right place. AM 950 and 95.7 FM. The sports leader, ESPN Rochester.
Back in the sports bar, Danger and Battaglia, ESPN Rochester. Appreciate you joining us. Going to talk some U.S. Open golf. Going to talk some Buffalo Sabres. He is the host of the T to Green show on our sister station, WGR. Also hear him on the Sabres radio network as well. Brian Koziel, always good with his time and joining us in the sports bar. Brian, how are you?
Hey, guys. Happy Father's Day week to all the dads out there.
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. What goes better with Father's Day than a late round on Sunday afternoon where you can watch round four of the U.S. Open Prime from Pebble time. Beach, Brian? That's good stuff.
It is. It's great TV. I mean, this is probably the peak. This is, you know, with Pebble and maybe Augusta National in terms of the scenic shots. I'm sure they'll be hitting a lot. And I love, too, now that they've decided to play some of the West Coast majors and have the team kind of play locally when they are, which makes it prime time for us here in the East Coast. So I'm a big fan of that, how, you know, 9, 10 o'clock at night and you're watching the leaders come in. I think that makes good TV.
No, it'll make look, if there's game 7 of Sunday night, it's going to be a conflict, Brian, but that would be a problem I would welcome. Let's talk about the course. Certainly Pebble is a course that we all can picture in our mind. What are you reading? How is the course holding up? Because we've heard, you know, the stories going back to last year at Shinnecock, where the USGA, they have this penchant for making things really, really tough. Did they in any way dial it back, so to speak, for this weekend?
I think they knew they couldn't mess it up. And based upon the fact that they've had controversies, probably more so than not, over the last decade or so, you can't mess up Pebble Beach. I mean, this is a course that people just, like, they revere. They spend years saving up their work bonuses to go out and have, like, a, you know, midlife crisis, once of a lifetime year, you know, round, you know, out there. Like, you can't mess up Pebble Beach for people. It's an iconic place. They just, as we've seen in years past, they've burnt out greens, they've tricked out holes, they've done things that maybe don't reward good golf shots. So far, it looks so good. And the greens are rolling absolutely perfect. Now, the greens themselves, these POA greens, they tend to grow quicker than others. And as the day goes on, it will get a little bumpier. But for those that get morning rounds, and they'll obviously each get a crack at that with either today or tomorrow, the greens just look absolutely perfect. So it's not a super long course. It's just over 7,000 yards. So I expected that the rough was going to be up and that the fairways are going to be narrow. And I think it is. And I think players won't complain. I think it comes bad. It looks like bad PR if you're a player and you're complaining about playing at Pebble Beach anyway. So I don't think that most are going to go out and do that anyway. But they know what it is. It doesn't look like at the moment any sort of setup is unfair. So I would say so far so good by the USGA.
Brian, there's some Tiger Woods prop bets out there. You know, if Woods leads after round one, plus 2,000. Leading after round two, plus 1,600. Woods or Koepka to win the U.S. Open at plus 500. I mean, you know, based on what these two guys have done so far this season, and specifically Koepka, who I don't think we talk enough about, you know, would you take either one of these guys or would you still look at the field?
I mean, the math says you should still take the field,
right?
Even though I feel like I could sit here and argue for both of them. For Koepka, I mean, he just continues to still not get more credit than he should. I was listening to his press conference 2 days ago, and they were asking him about how in Fox's U.S. Open promo, they did essentially a highlight montage, like their little 30-second thing that they run all week. And he didn't appear in it, but there were about 6 or 7 other golfers. And I'm thinking, guys, the 2-time defending champion, he's number one in the world. Like, he needs any more motivation. And he's a guy that is just definitely fueled by that. But this week, regardless of maybe exterior motivation, the fact that he could become the first guy ever to win three U.S. Opens in a row, I mean, this is ever. I mean, Tiger Woods did not do this. Jack Nicklaus did not do this. Ben Hogan did not do this. I mean, that could be something that would be incredible. And for those that even only casually follow the sport, maybe during majors, I mean, if you know somebody wins three U.S. Opens in a row, then you're going to consider him one of the greatest of all time. And that would give him his fifth major and three U.S. Opens. I think you'd have to definitely put that in the conversation.
Fifth in the last nine, bro. So, what? I mean, complicated question, but that's Tiger-esque. Why don't we even have? Why doesn't he even have half the love that Tiger gets?
Is it because, I don't know, his personality isn't as exciting? But you know what? Tiger didn't open up a ton in terms of having the great soundbite or the friendly demeanor. I mean, we know why Mickelson is beloved. He's got that, you know, lovable smile. He interacts with fans. He gives great sound bites. So, I mean, you know, that's easy to explain. Now, Tiger necessarily didn't have that friendly demeanor, at least when he was dominant, he didn't. But, boy, did he have that swagger, and, boy, did he have that it that motivates all of us to watch sports. And it was electric when he was playing great. Koepka, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just because he's so good that it's boring golf, but he doesn't get too amped up.
Yeah.
His attitude about majors, which I think is part of the reason he's winning, is that he doesn't take them too seriously. And maybe that's why people kind of haven't jumped on his bandwagon enough.
I was going to say, Brian, it almost feels like he's a robot. I mean, he's, you know, he reminds me of like an NHL player. You know, what we always say, one of the problems with the NHL is they don't have any personalities. They don't have any characters. They don't have anybody that, you know, stands out that you would say is a star because they are the entire package. And Koepka, while he's an unbelievable golfer, is almost robotic in his approach to how he goes in there and wins these majors. And you know what? Would it kill him to show maybe just a little bit more emotion during his round or after his round in the post game in the post round you know press conferences? Maybe it makes him a little bit more likable, more relatable.
I think so. I mean, I think as we start to learn more and more about him, I think we will maybe start to like him more and more. I like the fact that he's motivated by the fact that no one's giving him enough credit. I shouldn't say no one. A lot of people are not giving him enough credit. I like his sound bites about what he said before the PGA Championship, that he said that half the field is just going to shoot themselves out of it because it's a major and they get too amped up, but they can't handle it. I mean, we don't hear golfers kind of rip into other golfers too much. I mean, this sport is pretty sound bite friendly in terms of one competitor talking anyway negative about another one. And, you know, when they asked him, you know, why are you doing so well in majors? And he's like, well, half the field is going to shoot themselves out of it. Like, that's pretty controversial in terms of what golf sound bites go like. And I don't know how likable he is on the tour. It seems as though he gets along well with his fellow competitors. But he just kind of, you're right, he goes in stoic. He goes in kind of blasé, but he gets the job done. And that might not be as dramatic as guys, even a guy like McIlroy or a guy like Spieth, there's a little flair there that can be more likable. And I'm sure Koepka's probably battling with that in terms of maybe gaining popularity.
WGR's T to Green host. You also hear him host the intermission in the postgame, the Buffalo Sabres. We'll get to the Sabres stuff here in a little bit. So Ricky Fowler has just parred 15, so actually 16 now, and he is through 16, 5 under for the tournament. Ricky Fowler, best golfer never to win a major currently on the tour. True or false, would you say, Brian?
I'd say that's true. I'd be okay with that argument. Maybe guys have had better careers that haven't won a major yet. Maybe I'll go Matt Kuchar or other players of that caliber. But best player talent-wise on tour without a major, I think Fowler's the correct answer to that. He's had some really good starts in majors. 4 years ago, he finished in the top five in all of them, had a chance to win them all. So this is not something that we haven't seen before. I mean, he's had great day one and day twos, and then for some reason, on either a Saturday or a Sunday, he disappears. So I'm hoping it's not the case. We talk about it, why is Koepka not maybe as likable. I mean, God, Fowler definitely is likable, and likable from his fellow players as well. So I'm sure, you know, if you ask individuals on tour, if you said, hey, if you're not going to win this week's tournament, who would you want to win? I bet you a lot of players would say Ricky Fowler.
Brian, I'm looking over some of these other names and the odds that they're getting for this weekend. Patrick Cantlay is playing some really good golf. Tommy Fleetwood, Xander Schauffele, both at 22-1. I think both of those guys are guys to keep an eye on. Francesco Molinari at 35-1. I mean, you know, he just seems to show up whenever a major is being played. And looking down a little bit further, Tony Finau at 45-1. Bryson DeChambeau at 60-1. Any of these guys piquing your interest?
Fleetwood, out of that group that you mentioned, interesting thought from him this week. You remember last year, he flirted with 62 at Shinnecock. He shot that final round 63 to give himself a chance to win. And he said that his strategy on that day at Shinnecock last year was to aim for the center of every single green. And it obviously, he ended up having an outstanding day, historic day for him. He said this year, him and his caddy, because Pebble Beach's greens are smaller, he actually is not at all even going to look at pin placement sheets at all this week. He said they are going to do every shot to the center of the green and try to hit the center of the green every single time, knowing the fact that, look, these greens are small. The absolute worst case, if I'm in the center, is I'm going to have 30 feet or less every time. And he said, I like the way I'm putting. He goes, these greens are similar to some of the European Tour greens that I play. I'm very comfortable with the speed of them. So interesting strategy to not even be concerned with pin placement or pin sheets this week. So I'm curious to see what Fleetwood does, because he obviously did so well with it last year at Shinnecock. We'll see if that carries over this week.
Brian Koziel, our guest here in the Sports Bar. Brian, we haven't talked since we had the senior PGA. I know you were in town for that. How'd you think we fared as far as a host for that event?
I thought it was awesome. I mean, what, record crowd on Friday? And
yeah.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, was it a record crowd for the whole tournament?
I want to say it was a record crowd for the tournament, yeah, but Friday specifically, I think, was the largest crowd ever for a senior U.S. Open for a Friday in the history of the tour.
Yeah, and with rain delays here and there, I mean, well, I know it wasn't every day, but for people to stick it out and go through it, I mean, you guys don't need me to come on and tell you that I just think Rochester is a phenomenal golf area, and you know, kudos for those that drove elsewhere in Western New York to come to that event. I mean, I love driving to the events in Rochester. I wish there was a yearly event on the senior tour or the LPGA tour or both in Rochester. You guys have so many great courses that could host that event, even just beyond Oak Hill and its rich tradition. So no surprise at all. And the course played super hard. I actually was super fortunate on Monday. There was a pro-am event to be able to play in it the day after the event, and it definitely was humbling. If you hit the ball in the rough, holy cow. Like, and over the course of the day, like when by the time you're done, like you're mentally tired because the whole time it is, okay, I can't go in the rough. I can't go in the rough. And then when you do go in the rough, it's like, well, where do I go now so I don't end up in the rough again? It wasn't a surprise that the seniors, you know, ended up having a score that was what it was that ended up winning it. So very tough conditions. I'm sure that the members this year, too, with it being wet when they now get a chance to play it more. I don't know how if they keep it at that length all the time, but, boy, what a challenge it is to play that course. But to answer your question, a great host. And I don't know if you were there for the Junior PGA League things, Mike, on Saturday, but they did a nice job of that.
It was remarkable. And you know, I know that they put in a lot of time and effort into, of course, putting on a major event like that. But the Junior PGA stuff, my daughter was beside herself. She had such a blast with her teammates. They do a great job, you know, working with their sponsors and KitchenAid. And then, you know, setting them up with a nice little area where they could just sit and watch the tournament happen right before their eyes. I mean, I was blown away and more than impressed with not just Oak Hill, but with you know, Brian and everybody that put that tournament on together at Oak Hill. It was a great event.
Yeah, the PGA pros across Western New York just do an amazing job. I just think about the opportunities that kids now have, and I shouldn't even be on kids, for adults even too, things that they do now to try to get people to get involved in golf, the different programs. And I just, thinking about the difference from what it was for maybe when I was a kid to what it is now, I mean, it's incredible how many opportunities there are. So You know, you don't have to belong to Oak Hill to get involved in these things, too. That's what's great about it. You know, it's open to pretty much anybody. You can get involved in all these sort of activities. So, you know, you can go see your local pro or at any course and just contact them, and, you know, they'll set you up to kind of get you going. I think it's great. If you want to get your kid involved in the game, if you like playing, the best thing to do is get your kid involved playing, because then you'll get to play more.
Yeah.
Brian, we saw Ryan O'Reilly hoist the Stanley Cup last night, and there are a lot of opinions out there regarding this, and I don't want to lead you one way or another, so I'll just ask the question very basically. Your thoughts on the former Sabre hoisting the Stanley Cup last night?
Happy for him. I think Ryan O'Reilly overall is a good guy. I think he's a good teammate. For whatever reason, he and some of the other young players on the Sabres just did not always see eye to eye. I don't know how much to the point it was that ultimately was a reason why Jason Bottrell decided to move him. Of course, his comments at the end of last year saying that he had lost the love for the game, I know fans want to point to that right away. We had been told that they were trying to maybe even move him before those comments were made. I don't really have a huge issue with him saying that. I think if anybody's followed the Sabres organization for the last decade, who has not had that feeling about this organization? If you've invested any time or money in terms of supporting that team, how could you have not had that feeling at some point if you're a human being or a sports fan of thinking like, you know what, this team is just driving me crazy to the point where maybe you find it a burden to go if you have season tickets, or find it annoying that you spend your hard-earned money maybe to go to one game to take your family, and then it's a lackluster performance and you get annoyed. Like, I don't really have a problem with what he said. I hope that wasn't the ultimate reason that he got moved. In the end, I do understand why they moved him. We keep hearing so much. I mean, Paul Hamilton, who works on our broadcast, tell me all the time about how that locker room, just until it gets right, he goes, I just don't know if they'll ever win, regardless of what kind of young talent they had. So maybe they felt that moving O'Reilly was a piece in that direction. I mean, after you watch what he did in the Stanley Cup and what he did with the Blues, it's hard to argue that it was the right thing to do. But ultimately, he's a good player that should have gotten you a lot in return. And I think the biggest argument that I would have against of how it went is what Jason Bottrell got back. I mean, if Ryan O'Reilly, if this was the expectation of a player that the Blues were hoping to get, or you thought he was going to get, and they should have gotten more. They ended up getting a player who essentially quit on them in Patrick Berglund. They ended up essentially getting a player in Vladimir Sobotka that to me is kind of useless. I mean, interchange him with any fourth or fifth line person, and I wouldn't notice a difference at all. And Tage Thompson, to me, should have been playing with the Amerks for most of the year. His development, I thought, went backwards as the year went on. So beyond the number one pick coming in, it looks like one of the worst trades in recent memory in this organization's history, and you just better hope that Thompson performs, or they do something great with that number one pick, which, by the way, now is dead last if they won the cup.
Brian, if was Jason Bottrell at a disadvantage? If NHL insiders knew that two alphas in the locker room, and Jack and Ryan O'Reilly, just couldn't coexist, did that make it harder for Jason Bottrell to be able to unload Ryan O'Reilly for anything with any sort of value whatsoever?
Yeah, I'm sure it didn't help. And maybe, you know, he had a big bonus due coming up. I mean, his contract's a big contract. So, I mean, I'm sure maybe that had a piece to it. I mean, the Blues are paying Tarasenko quite a bit of money as well, and they've got a couple of other high-priced players that maybe that was a piece that turned other teams off if he was speaking with other teams beyond St. Louis. I'm sure he got other calls beyond the Blues for Ryan O'Reilly. Just getting a center with all the tools that he has beyond offense, the fact that he can play defense, the fact that he can penalty kill, the fact that he's one of the best, if not the best, face-off person in the NHL. I mean, you can see why he would be quite attractive to many organizations. But I wonder if there were some teams that maybe did have an opportunity to give a better offer, but maybe ultimately couldn't afford it to take on that contract. And ultimately, maybe this is where he ended up having to go. But, yeah, I mean, you're trading a guy. And if you're the GM on the other line, you think, well, why are you trading this guy that I think can do so many things well at the most coveted position in the NHL, which is a center? So you're right. It's probably because, well, we're hearing negative things about him. And also in Colorado, that was kind of the MO there too. Fair or unfair, Colorado lost a lot when O'Reilly was in a leadership position there too. So I'm not blaming Bottrell totally for this because it happened in Colorado. He got here, had a great start, and people were like, how could Colorado trade Ryan O'Reilly? It kind of played out this way, and then a few years later, he's off to St. Louis, and now people are saying, how did Jason Bottrell trade him to St. Louis? And winning solves everything, there's no doubt. He's definitely got his love back for the game.
Do you put any of the blame on Jack Eichel for this? As the team captain, the team leader, was he part of the reason why Ryan O'Reilly? I mean, just that relationship between O'Reilly and Eichel. What do we know, Brian?
I think it's fair to put something on Eichel. I know that this organization put themselves in a tailspin, essentially backwards, to get a player of his caliber, and they got him. And they signed him to an 8-year deal. I mean, he's essentially going to be the captain for, again, the next seven, eight years coming up here. So, yes, I would put some responsibility on Eichel. You're the captain. I know you're young. I know people might say you're not mature yet in terms of how you lead a team. But you're wearing a C, and O'Reilly is a great player. You guys got to figure it out. I mean, you're two highly well-paid professionals, one making over $7 million and one making $8 million. Like, to me, if I was Jason Bottrell last year, I would have called both of them in a room and said, guys, I'm locking the door and don't come out until I see you guys walking out, hands holding together here. Figure it out. Like, you know, with the amount of money that's at stake here and how the amount of talent that the two of you guys have, like, figure it out. I feel like I would have went down that route before I would have maybe tried to make a trade.
Right.
He's like, there's always the coddling of these younger players now, and I know I kind of sound a little old school on this, but to me, when you have an amazing, talented two-way center like Ryan O'Reilly, like, to just trade him and hope you hit on prospects or picks, like, I don't really want to take that risk, and Jason Bottrell better hope that something in return does come through.
Well, you get $10 million a year for Jack, and you got O'Reilly over there who's a grinder and probably feels disrespected that somebody that is as unproven as Jack was when he got that deal. You're paying for the potential of what Jack Eichel could become, and I'm with you. If I'm going to lay blame on Jason Bottrell or Phil Housley for anything, it's their mismanagement of two alphas in the locker room at the same time and their inability to get those two guys to coexist and work together.
Yeah, I agree. Housley deserves some blame for that, too, no doubt. He didn't communicate very well. And thank you for correcting me. Eichel does make 10. He's heading the 8 number in my head for some reason because of the 8-year deal. But yeah, Housley also didn't communicate with his players. He bears a lot of responsibility as a coach. Like, if your room isn't right, we'll fix it. He was a player in the room for a long time and a Hall of Fame player. Like, yeah, I don't need you to yell and scream at every single player behind the bench or even in your locker room all the time. But maybe it shouldn't have even gotten to Jason Bottrell. Maybe it should have been Phil Housley that would have sat them down and said, guys, this is not working. We need to know that you guys are going to be here for the foreseeable future. What do we have to do to make this work? So, hey, you're right. I mean, Housley should share just as much, if not more, of the blame for that situation developing the way it did, too.
Brian, I could talk to you all show about this. wrapping up on the Sabres. July 1st, it's coming really quick here. So Skinner is in. Quick thought on that. And what is your expectation? What else can happen, should happen, trade deadline in terms of free agent trades, other things?
Well, I'm happy that they got Skinner. And, yes, it probably was at a price tag that seems too high for what he's going to bring. But guess what? The Sabres were in no position of leverage. A 40-goal scorer, you're going to let him go? I mean, that would just have been devastating. I mean, who would have been left at that point that you could have counted on for scoring beyond Eichel and Reinhardt? And there's no one that you really could say, yes, I can count on. I think there's some upside. I really like what Victor Olofsson did down the last few games with Buffalo. And there's a couple other Amerks that I'm excited about, but you can't just expect some of these guys to just walk in and score 30 goals and just expect that it's going to be there. I think Jeff Skinner, even with a semi-okay season, is going to score at least 30 if he's playing with Jack Eichel. So that, I thought, had to get done. I'm glad at least Jason Bottrell didn't mess that up. And to me, still the number one priority for this team is still finding scoring. After this top line, if Eichel, Skinner, and Reinhardt are going to play together, which I'm guessing they're going to want to. Beyond that, I said I'm intrigued by Olofsson and Casey Mittelstadt. You hope maybe there's some more growth, but who else on this team can you count on to score? So when it goes to free agency in July 1st, to me, it's still all about scoring. And there's some players out there that he can get that mid-tier level player. I don't know if you're going to be able to get more than maybe one big price guy, but he's definitely going to need depth. You look at the Bruins, you look at the Blues, their third and fourth lines contribute. And the Sabres' third and fourth lines, in terms of their offensive production, I would have to imagine they're right at the bottom of the league. So he's got to start getting depth and guys that can put the puck in the net.
Brian, it's great hearing your voice. Looking forward to a great weekend of U.S. Open golf. Let our listeners know where they can hear the Tee to Green show. That's Saturday mornings on WGR, correct?
Yep, Saturday morning. 2 hours this week. We do 2 hours for the majors, 7 to 9. And, of course, if you can't hear it on 550, you can listen on radio.com on the app.
Brian, you're the best. Appreciate it. Hopefully we get some nice dry courses. It stops raining. We'll enjoy what's left here of spring heading into July. Brian, appreciate your time today.
That's right. Well said. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Brian Koziel, our sister station WGR in Buffalo. The Tee to Green show, that's Saturday morning. And, of course, you'll hear Brian during the Sabres season as your in-game host for Buffalo Sabres hockey.
Yeah, there's your post-game show host kind of echoing what Dennis Bernstein said yesterday that, okay, there's the root of it. Why is Ryan O'Reilly in St. Louis? The two alpha males, and you chose one.
Well, you didn't have a choice. Your only other choice is, and again, I will say, if you're going to be mad at Jason Botterill for anything, you know, you can't be entirely mad at him. You have to share some of that blame with Phil Housley, a rookie head coach that year that they were dead last, who didn't know how to manage two alphas in the line, which is surprising when you're Phil Housley and you've played as long as you played and you had a Hall of Fame career, that you weren't able to identify that this was an issue between two of your best players, your two best players, and you couldn't get them to coexist. You couldn't get them to work together. You couldn't get them on the same page for whatever reason. You're stuck. You're paying the guy $10 million a year. You just committed $10 million a year prior to that season to Jack Eichel. So if you're Ryan O'Reilly, you might be a little offended or upset at that. I thought I was worth more than what I'm getting. I'm not the team. Okay. All right. You can't be mad at Ryan O'Reilly. And the jury's still out on Jack. Let's see what this year looks like. But I can tell you, I've seen this play out in a different sport with my favorite team when an organization goes all in on one player.
I hate this analogy. I know where you're going with this. And this, if you haven't heard this, this is going to make you cringe.
Well, it's my Chicago Bears and Jay Cutler.
Wow.
I'm sorry. And I don't know that Jack Eichel is that. But there are a lot of parallels to what's going on with the Sabres and what went on during those years where I suffered as a Bears fan with Jay Cutler. I was the biggest Jay Cutler apologist for so long. I felt like I was the only person on earth who would defend the guy. Because everybody on the outside was like, he's a punk. Look at him. Pouty on the sideline. Doesn't care. Pulls himself out of his most important game of his career because he's injured. He's a punk. Players around the league didn't respect him. Fans didn't respect him. And here I am like, nope, he's the quarterback. He's the guy. He's the guy. He's the best player on the team. You got to give him everything that he wants. Everything. Well, Jay Cutler doesn't like the offensive coordinator. All right, let's bring in Mike Martz. Mike Martz knows how to air it out. Let's bring in Mike Martz. No, that ain't going to work. All right, let's bring in another coordinator. We'll bring in another coordinator. Well, what else do you need? Oh, you need a wide receiver. We'll bring in the wide receiver you had when you were successful in Denver. Brandon Marshall, come to Chicago. Yes, okay, we got that. We're running out of excuses. The head coach isn't working. We'll get a new head coach. GM? All right, we need a new GM. We'll get a new GM. They did everything. They blew it up over and over and over. And what do they have to show for it? Nothing. Nothing. If it's not in your DNA to be that leader, but you get thrust in this role of being a leader, you'll never get the respect of your teammates. Now, maybe it changes. Maybe you get enough guys in that locker room who look up to Jack and think he's our leader. But I don't see it. Short of the sitting on the bench with Victor Olofsson and going over the, you know, okay, yeah, that was a nice moment. That was a nice moment at the end of the season.
Might be choreographed dog and pony show.
I'm not going to go that. Well, conspiracy theorist on it. But I want to be able to see it with my eyes. I want to be able to see it with the results of the team. You're dysfunctional.
It's Kruger. Kruger. Kruger can X and O and do whatever else he get. He's got to coach Jack Eichel in a way that really has not a lot to do with on the ice. Can he help him grow as a man?
Well, I'm a big believer that you're a product of your environment. And when you go to work, the person that supervises you can be influential in how you approach your day-to-day. You could look up to that person. If you're Jack Eichel, you could look up to a guy like Ralph Kruger and you could say, wow, this guy is really worldly. He's really smart. He's really savvy. He knows how to command a room. He knows how to get the most out of guys. What does he do and how can I apply that to my leadership skills? Because we're not going to talk about Jack Eichel not being a good player, not being a productive player. He is. He's a point-per-game player, right? That's what you have in Jack Eichel. Yeah. You're paying him $10 million for that production. But as the team captain, you're also paying him to be a little bit more. And Ralph Kruger has to find a way to extract that little bit more out of the Sabres captain. Be interesting to see. Can't be mad at Ryan O'Reilly. That was a fun conversation with Brian Koziel. We'll get that for you up and on demand shortly at ESPNRochester.com and through the radio.com app. We are running way late, Gino. We've got, I'll drink to that on the way. Yeah, well, you know. Yeah. I'll drink to that. Some takes on the way in the sports bar. Well, I know you have some takes from the game last night.
Oh, yes. Can I just put NBC on blast one last time? I mean, there were 5 minutes of excellence last night and the rest of the broadcast. Ugh. I mean, seriously, can you learn from this, NBC? I have a suggestion for next year.
I have a non-sports take that has everything to do with how we consume live television events in 2019. Twitter. Ugh. Yeah, I know. I know. I have a social media rant coming up.
I have a confession. I mean, you know how tough it is to watch sports without Twitter now, though?
We'll discuss. That's all drink to that. It's on the way next in the sports bar. Mad Hatter's Hideaway, Gino.
You know what Sunday is?
Father's Day.
It is. Yes. Dad might want a cigar or two or three. Where do I go? I only shop once a year. Do I go online? No, you don't go online. You go over and shop local at Mad Hatter's Hideaway. It's on Culver Road in Irondequoit. 300 varieties for you to choose from. Plus, that's the place to go to, Mad Hatter's Hideaway, for CBD products. They have the Wonderland brand there. And with that, they can answer all of your questions. I'm sure you have some on CBD. What is the best product for you? Nick and the guys can certainly answer that. Mad Hatter's Hideaway, Culver Road in Irondequoit, just south of the 104. When you stop in, tell me you heard about it here in the sports bar.
Push your bandwidth to the limit with ESPNRochester.com. Stream the sports leader on your computer. Read the latest rumblings from the Bills and rumors from the Sabres. Breaking news, expert analysis and opinion, we've got you covered. Plus on-demand audio and all of the best moments from the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia. Bookmark ESPNRochester.com, the online home of AM 950 and 95.7 FM. The Sports Leader. ESPN Rochester.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.